Oh, and welcome to step five of the Stepping Stones to Healing and Thriving program. This step is entitled, What's Wrong With Me? Understanding and Managing Your Body's Responses to Trauma. This step, we will focus more on the physical symptoms and the challenges that come with complex PTSD. So, wrong one. My apologies there. Next slide. There we go. So, by understanding these symptoms and their connections to trauma, you can take proactive steps towards improving your mental and your physical well-being. So, let's get started. Our goal for this session is to equip individuals who experience complex PTSD or CPTSD with the knowledge and tools to identify and manage the physical symptoms that are associated with it. Our process overview, we know that module one is about understanding. So here we're going to clarify what CPTSD is and isn't, and how it shows up in the body. Module two is where we're going to kind of lightly skim over ways of managing the physical symptoms. And then module three, we're going to get into a deeper dive of these different ways of managing and how you can integrate these coping strategies and management strategies into your daily life. Module one. In this module, we will unpack the differences between PTSD and CPTSD and delve into the importance of recognizing the physical symptoms. So, simply put, PTSD results. Let me see if I can get this black thing off the screen. Doesn't look like it. Okay, my apologies. I'll start again. So, simply put, PTSD results from unprocessed psychological wounding that has suffered from a one-time event. And these can be things like natural disasters, car crashes, sexual or physical assaults, perhaps a terrorist attack, or what we all know about or have heard about is combat during wartime. However, CPTSD or complex PTSD, it results from unprocessed psychological and emotional wounding that stem from ongoing traumatic events, no matter what kind they are, as because they're happening too fast, too soon, and are too much. And they're also blended with a sense of being alone with what's going on and the pain that comes with it. So there's an overwhelm. The body is just flooded. So some of the causes of complex PTSD may include prolonged domestic violence or witnessing it. It could involve childhood abuse, whether it's physical, sexual, or emotional, verbal. It could include sibling abuse. It could include torture, genocide, parental addictions, or incarceration. So there's a sense of abandonment there. Are there slavery, discrimination, poverty, abandonment, whether it's literal, like physical abandonment, your parents leave you, or there's emotional abandonment, they're not there for you emotionally, or something that's common today, unfortunately, are things that we hear about are school shootings, community violence, human trafficking, and things like that. So the nervous system is overwhelmed and cannot process and detox, sorry, from one event before the next one happens. And it can feel like chronic oppression. When this happens, there's no safe adult to help the child co-regulate their emotions. Therefore, they cannot return to homeostasis, which means their sense of safety and calm. Therefore, the body is constantly on edge, and there's adrenaline and cortisol that's flooding the system. And this is what causes the physical symptoms of the emotional and psychological trauma. So now we're going to look at the physical symptoms of PTSD. Now, they're usually things like nightmares, flashbacks. So that's where you're feeling like the bad experience is happening again. They can be physical reactions like a racing heart or a faster heartbeat or a really strong heartbeat or sweating or something that when you're around something that reminds you of the bad experience, you might have trouble falling asleep and or staying asleep. Perhaps there are emotional outbursts, angry outbursts. So there's a challenge with emotional dysregulation. Maybe there's a feeling of always being on edge. Like there's a sense of foreboding doom, like something bad's going to happen. And so therefore there's a sense of our need to be hypervigilant. Perhaps we notice that you're trying to avoid thinking or talking about the bad experience. Maybe there's an avoidance of being around anything or anyone that reminds you even remotely about that event. Maybe you've lost interest in activities that you used to find enjoyable. And maybe you're finding it hard to feel happy or loving because you're emotionally guarded. Whereas complex PTSD often has all of those symptoms and more. CPTSD involves a negative sense of self. There is persistent shame, there's guilt, there's a sense of believing that we're unworthy and unlovable. And there's a sense of powerlessness. So those are the four lies that we learned about in the very first step. Severe difficulty in forming and maintaining meaningful relationships, that often is a challenge. And that's because we maybe have developed an unhealthy attachment to our primary caregiver, sorry, which is usually our mom. And it also involves frequent negative thoughts and emotions. Perhaps we've lost the ability to feel safe and trust others. Maybe we feel confused or conflicted inside because the ability to make meaning out of what's going on has been compromised. There might be a lack of confidence, a dysregulated nervous system. Maybe you're a people pleaser or a perfectionist, or you're a high achiever, or you're feeling very stressed out, and so on. So the effects of complex PTSD. They're called complex for a reason. There are many, many layers to the traumatic wounding, and it takes time to overcome all of these. So there are physical symptoms of CPTSD. They're very common. This is because sensations in the body are the body's way of communicating what's going on the inside emotionally. Often, childhood trauma survivors had to ignore their feelings in order to survive. This results in pain later as it becomes the language the body uses to communicate. And it also uses our emotions. So it uses physical sensations and emotions, and they're kind of the same thing. There's an expression that I'm thinking about right now that says, feelings buried are buried alive. So what that means is that it eventually is going to surface. So I invite you to, instead of being frustrated with your body, but to be kind and compassionate with it. Be gentle and learn to listen to what your body is saying. The physical or somatic symptoms of ongoing trauma often manifest in autoimmune diseases. And one reason, as I mentioned earlier, is the overabundance of cortisol in the body. And that causes inflammation, which then your body reads as disease. So it attacks the inflammation, then leading to further health problems. As a result, many with CPTSD suffer with things like arthritis, lupus, ALS, some cancers, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, or other unexplained aches and pains. And personally, I suffer from osteoarthritis, and I know full well that this is due to my childhood trauma. So cortisol wreaks havoc on the human body. The hypervigilance, or the muscle armoring that we do, it causes muscle tension and headaches. The overworked muscles get exhausted. And that leads to chronic pain and tightness. If one has suffered physical mistreatment, there would be more layers to the physical ailments. Because post-traumatic stress disorder causes stress-related symptoms and migraines, tension headaches are the most common. Some of the symptoms of tension headaches, and I say this because many abuse survivors have learned to ignore their physical sensations. So, symptoms of tension headaches can include mild or moderate dull head pain. It can feel like there's pressure in the forehead or there's tenderness. Perhaps the scalp, neck, or shoulder pain, there's tenderness there. Are you finding that your shoulders are slowly inching up, that they're around your ears? It also includes fatigue, irritability, and trouble concentrating. So while mild tension headaches are typically only mildly or moderate, migraine episodes can be debilitating. They can shut a person down. And all of these things impact our daily functioning. And then there's our digestive issues. A lot of people hold their stress in their gut, and that can result in things like Crohn's disease, IBS, diabetes, GERD, gallstones, nausea, food allergies and sensitivities, and so on. Maybe your body lacks enzymes that are needed to digest food properly. I know that was a challenge for me for a while. With poor digestion, then obviously comes health concerns because nutrients cannot be assimilated properly. The body can become malnourished or dehydrated, even though you're eating very well. Taking supplements then becomes part of your daily routine. Weight challenges can result as well, and there could be unhealthy relationships with food. Now, when it comes to the heart, research has found that people with untreated CPTSD are at higher risk of developing heart and circulatory diseases such as atrial fibrillation, stroke, and heart attack, and risk factors like high blood pressure. Stresses on the heart can cause palpitations and tremors. With me, I have what is called premature ventricular beat. So that means that when I'm under stress, my heart, I can feel it skipping off beat and it feels like my whole chest is vibrating. I've been assured by the medical professional that this is no way life-threatening. It is not going to kill me, but still is unsettling. So if you have already had a major event like a heart attack or cardiovascular issues, having untreated CPTSD may make it more likely that you could have another one. And I say this not to cause alarm, but by emphasizing the point that treating your CPTSD can reduce your risk of having another heart event and help protect yourself from developing heart and circulatory diseases. And fatigue, oh my, sleep challenges, yes. Complex PTSD or CPTSD, it can affect our sleep patterns and quality by creating regular sleep disturbances. And let's be frank, if you've never really felt safe all of your life, will you really truly have good quality sleep? I don't think so. So, besides nightmares and flashbacks, these disturbances may appear as insomnia, hypervigilance, restless sleep, frequent awakenings, fatigue, daytime sleepiness, and maybe it's even gotten to the point where we have sleep apnea. So you notice that overall your sleep patterns are not good. You always feel like you're tired. Another thing that we might have a problem with is that we are very sensitive to sight, sound, touch, and smells or aromas. Clothing tags could be really difficult to ignore, and maybe they even hurt. Certain materials like wool or microfibers, like fleece, can be irritating. Perhaps there's a heightened startle response where there's an overreaction to sudden surprises or touch. I have had that. My husband has learned that he cannot walk up behind me and grab me from behind. I just freak right out. I jump. I jump to the point that it scares him. So I know I'm not alone. Other people have a sensitivity to loud noises, especially loud voices. So they're sensitive to anybody who has a raised voice, and to them, it feels like someone's yelling, right? It overwhelms their nervous system. Some people develop a fragrance or chemical intolerance. When they're around these, it can shut down their nervous system, or it can activate it to the point that their person is in panic attack or they become aggressive. So now you're invited to go to your workbook and take some of the self-reflection and self-assessment opportunities. Spend time identifying your physical symptoms, and there's a self-assessment checklist. And in the workbook, there are more symptoms that can be attributed to CPTSD. So take your time and process the information and notice what feelings are coming up for you. It's an opportunity to let curiosity surface and run free. If you want to, you can think about your past and what you witnessed or experienced. Practice noticing and focusing on the pain or health concern and see if there's thoughts and emotions that surface. And if not, that's okay too. Remember to approach your health concerns with compassion, kindness, and loving curiosity. Module 2. We're now going into managing the physical symptoms. So a brief overview of coping strategies will be covered in detail in Module 3. So here we're just going to name them a little bit. But we're also going to look at the importance of developing a robust wellness team that supports you as you go through your trauma recovery journey. So what can you do? Well, there's lifestyle adjustments. So you want to have a balanced diet and good hydration. Maintaining a nutritious diet and staying hydrated can help regulate your body's stress response and improve overall physical health. There's regular physical activity. So engaging in regular exercise can reduce muscle tension, improve mood, and enhance sleep quality. It doesn't have to be strenuous. Even just walking for 10 to 20 minutes is sufficient to start with. Movement is important because your body needs to work out the negative trauma stress and the energy that it carries. And then there is developing a consistent sleep routine. So in developing one, it can mitigate fatigue and improve your mental clarity. And then there's mind-body practices. So trauma recovery involves connecting the brain to the body. Gentle stretches, or if you're into yoga, those kind of exercises can help alleviate muscle tension and improve flexibility and promote relaxation. And then there's mindfulness practices. So by practicing mindfulness and meditation can reduce stress, it can enhance emotional regulation and improve your overall well-being. So it supports the journey to get acquainted to yourself and to your body again. And breathing exercises, these are important too. Learning techniques such as deep breathing can help calm the nervous system and reduce anxiety. And there are medical and therapeutic interventions. In my experience, I find that CPTSD recovery requires different modalities at different times of the healing journey. So I like to consider all the different practitioners that I have consulted and worked with and their various health modalities as all the people that are on my wellness team. I use them all to help me recover. So physical intervention is needed besides the mental health piece. Now we're going to go into the why. Well, childhood trauma is also stored in the body. Its cells, its nervous system, its vascular system, and so on. And as is said, many hands make light work. So with CPTSD recovery, professional help is crucial, and various modalities are needed along the entire journey. How so? Well, expert guidance is good. Professionals can offer specialized knowledge and treatment plans tailored to your specific needs. And you want to make sure that all your wellness team know about the other professionals that you are working with. And if there's an ego problem with one of them, that might be a red flag. So use your critical thinking skills to find a solution that supports your nervous system as you heal your trauma wounds. And there's comprehensive care. So by combining medical, psychological, and therapeutic approaches, that ensures a holistic treatment plan. And you want to have a good support team. Professional support can provide a safe space for healing and help you navigate your recovery journey effectively. Managing the physical symptoms of complex PTSD involves a combination of lifestyle adjustments, mind and body practices, and professional interventions. You are at the center of it all because you matter. Each strategy plays a crucial role in promoting physical and emotional healing. Seeking professional help is essential to ensure comprehensive care and support throughout your recovery journey. Again, you're invited to go back to your workbook, and you're invited to reflect on the suggestions that are provided and write your thoughts about these and imagine ways that you can incorporate them into your life. So you're welcome to stop the presentation here and go to your workbook or carry on, whatever works best for you. And now we're moving into module three. Here's where we're going to integrate the coping strategies for CPTSD into our everyday life. Here we're going to get to the part where you can practice sitting with the feelings that are evoked by the lies of childhood and offer yourself the space and grace to rebuild new neural pathways so that your sense of self and your nervous system can work together and heal the wounds with a lot of self-compassion and understanding. And I'll be your guide. And so, first of all, we're going to look at our lifestyle changes in a little bit deeper dive. So we know all this, right? Start your diet. So this is just a gentle reminder. Start your diet, your day with a healthy breakfast. Ensure that your first meal gets your metabolism going. It includes protein, healthy fats, and whole grains that stabilize your blood sugar levels. You can help yourself by planning and preparing meals ahead, perhaps doing that on the weekends. And that can help maintain a balanced diet throughout the week when you're a little bit more rushed and things are a little bit more chaotic. One of the things that can help you is using your crock pot, and you can make hearty and healthful meals. And what's really important is that you stay hydrated. Carry a water bottle and aim to drink at least 8 glasses of water a day. Drinking plenty of water helps the body to release the toxins, and your liver will thank you. But because trauma impacts brain function, ensuring you are also consuming enough omega-3 is important. And that could be by eating avocados, having olive oil, but also there's one more thing. Some anecdotal reports and preliminary studies suggest that coconut oil could help improve cognitive function and slow cognitive decline. Make sure you do your research and find out what works for you. Now, sleep. Well, oh, what I wouldn't give for a good night's sleep. One thing that helps me and will help you is establishing good sleep hygiene. That means what we did with our kids or when we were little is having a good bedtime routine. What can be part of that is developing a relaxing pre-sleep routine, such as reading for a while, taking a warm bath, listening to soft music. All that signals your body that it's time to wind down. And if you are a person that you find being on screens actually wakes you up, then you might want to have a goal of being screen-free for at least 2 hours before you head to bed. Setting regular sleep and wake times is also good. Going to bed and waking up at the same time every day, even on weekends, helps your body develop a sense of safety and trust. Creating a restful environment. So that would involve ensuring that your bedroom is dark when you go to sleep. It's quiet and it's cool. And if you're living in a noisy area, perhaps consider using earplugs or having a white noise machine. Even having a fan blowing is enough white noise. If you have challenges in this area, perhaps speak to your doctor or contact a sleep clinic to have your sleep quality assessed and work with a sleep psychologist. That's something that I had to do a few years ago. There's no shame in that, in getting help. And then there's regular physical activity. By setting realistic goals, we aim for at least 20 minutes of physical activity most days of the week. We do what we can, and that can include walking and cycling, or maybe even dancing. Incorporating movement into your routine means you can take short breaks to stretch or walk around, especially if you have a sedentary job, you work at a desk. Find enjoyable activities. Choose things that you enjoy that make sticking to them, like swimming, dancing, or hiking, easier to do. You can look forward to them more. What I have found by incorporating movement into my day is I set alarms on my phone to remind me that's time to get up, breathe, move, stretch. Otherwise, it's very easy just to work through for hours and not even move a muscle. So that when I do finally get up and move, oh, things feel tight. And now we're going to look at the need for the mind-body practice. And that is done through gentle stretching is one way. So having morning stretch routines. So even starting your day with stretching in your bed, just gently, that helps wake up your body. Perhaps you can join a stretching class. You can do this in person or online. And if you can do it a couple of times a week, and integrate them into your stress schedule, that is helpful. And we also, as mentioned previously, to use your breaks wisely. Incorporate short stretching sessions during work or study habits to relieve your muscle tension. And take these breaks as part of your health self-care routine. And then there's mindfulness practice. You hear a lot of people talking about mindfulness practice. Well, what does that mean? Well, it doesn't have to be anything heavy. It could just be listening to maybe a daily guided meditation that can get your mind off of all the craziness that maybe is going in your head and just get you imagining walking through a forest or sitting by the ocean. That will help you slow your thoughts down. There are also mindful moments that we can take every day. We can integrate these into our daily activities. Like, for example, if you enjoy your first cup of coffee or tea, do you savor the aroma? Do you wrap your fingers around the mug or the cup and you enjoy the warmth? Do you enjoy the taste of it as it goes down your past your throat, your tongue, and down your throat? Do you love the warmth of that? What about when you're going out walking? Do you notice the crunch of your feet hitting the ground that you're walking on? Can you touch grass? Can you touch nature as you're walking by? Pardon me. What about the sights that you see? Do you see trees? Do you see buildings? Do you hear sounds? Do you notice aromas and smells? Those are allowing us to be mindful of being in the moment. Even a mundane thing like washing dishes is an opportunity to practice mindfulness. Notice the warm water in your hands and the dishes. Notice what happens when you pick up the dish from the sudsy water. Notice the suds as you're washing the dish. Just noticing all of that helps you to focus fully on what is happening right in the present moment. As you've noticed, many childhood trauma survivors have difficulty quieting their mind or even slowing it down. That impacts the ability to be fully present, to just enjoy the moment. And that in turn robs us of our joy and inner peace. So mindfulness practices help reduce the mental racing and the intrusive thoughts. And CPTSD survivors often have challenges with breathing. If you're like me, you might find yourself holding your breath and you don't even know why, or not even breathing deeply enough. So, one thing we can do is schedule breathing breaks. Ensure that you have visible or audible reminders to take deep breathing breath breaks throughout the day. As I mentioned, I have alarms on my phone to remind me of that. If you're going to go to a stressful event, you've got to be do a presentation or anything like that. You want to use breathing exercises before the meetings or presentations or any other potentially stressful event, or even just going to a party, right? Breathing deeply can calm your nerves. So inhale deeply into your belly through your nose for a count of four, and then exhale slowly through your mouth as if through a straw for a count of eight. This breathing exercise activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which helps the body go into rest and digest state. And you can practice it as often as you need to. You might even find yourself yawning after a few times. So it tells you your body is relaxing and it's recalibrating. By placing your hand on your heart and your belly areas while you're breathing, that can help you relax and prepare for sleep. Mindful breathing exercises by practicing these deep breathing exercises when you're feeling stressed and anxious can really help you deal with what's going on the inside. And then there's medical and therapeutic interventions. It might be considered a given when feeling aches and pains to go see a doctor, but depending on your li where you live, that might be a challenge. So, and for trauma survivors, that also adds a challenge to this because maybe there's lack of energy, there's low self-worth. That can make it very easy for us to neglect ourselves. So self-care isn't always easy, and it depends on the degree of the heat trauma impact. And as mentioned earlier, maybe you've learned to ignore any physical symptoms. Maybe you've learned to shut off pain and you don't even notice. So this is just a gentle reminder. When you consult your healthcare provider, so do regular checkups if you can. Schedule regular appointments with your provider and monitor your physical and mental health. Maybe putting reminders in your phone alarm or on your calendar can help you remember. Open up your communication. To tailor your treatment plan, keep a symptom journal and share your experiences with your doctor or therapist. This is where mindfulness and journaling comes in really handy. And then there is medication management. So if you're prescribed, you want to take your medications as directed and discuss any side effects or concerns with your provider. There's also alternative medicines like acupuncture, kinesiology, functional medicine, reflexology, EFT or tapping, working with an osteopath, and so on. All of these have benefits, but do your research and find out what works for others and notice what does and doesn't work for you. Be willing to try things that make sense, but yet don't compromise your own values and belief systems. By directing your attention to the pain itself and acknowledging it is there has helped me many times. For example, I have restless leg syndrome, and I've had it for most of my life. And I've just come to learn that it's actually connected to the flea response in childhood trauma. Not all the time, but for me, a lot of it was. I do have physical symptoms too, or physical issues, but when my restless leg is acting up, and it's because I'm agitated or I'm traumatized, what I do is I touch my leg where I feel the twitch is coming from, and I speak to it very gently. And I say things like, I see you. I know you're there. I understand that you're trying to tell me something. And then I remind that sensation that I'm safe and that I'm okay. And interestingly enough, almost every time, it stops twitching right away. So, also things that we can do for ourselves are massage and physiotherapy. Again, scheduling routine, regular sessions with a physiotherapist or a physical therapist or a massage therapist that can address chronic pain and muscle tension. They often will give you at-home exercises, so do what they suggest. And that will complement your professional sessions. And there's also self-massaging techniques you can learn. Also, if you have it in your budget, you can buy a machine that can give you a massage, either through your back or something handheld. Do what you can to help release the tension out of your body. And then there is talk therapy. We want to look at our mental fitness. So therapy is really important. Trauma recovery coaching sessions, all of these are important. Make and attend your sessions regularly, whether that's through in person or virtually. We all need support to help us process our trauma. It also teaches us the safety in relationships, safety within yourself, and you're also learning how to develop healthy coping strategies. There's also support groups that you can join. When you're with fellow survivors, it really helps having your shared experiences, and then you can gain insights of what others have gone through as well. And there's bibliotherapy, which means continued learning through books and articles on trauma recovery. So attend them if you can. Attend the webinars, buy the books, listen to them, whatever you need to do, and that will help you understand what's going on with you and help you develop skills. And as you are aware, here at Hilton Coaching and Consulting, we do offer group sessions, and they're available every month. So reach out to me if you want some more information on that. The key here is consistency and self-compassion. That's what's going to help us create lasting and positive habits. It's going to create sustainability. So I want to remind you that there's hope. When we integrate these coping strategies into your daily life, you can significantly improve your ability to manage the physical symptoms of CPTSD. Start small. Start with small, manageable changes and gradually build on them. And be gentle with yourself. Trauma recovery is baby steps. So working on your physical health doesn't mean that all of your symptoms of CPTSD will suddenly disappear. But if you keep working at it, the symptoms that you have will most likely lessen and they can be well managed. A gentle reminder that what you feel and your aches and pains that you suffer are not your fault. It's because of what happened to you. Stay curious. Be compassionate with yourself and the symptoms that you have. See if they are deep-rooted emotions, wounds that are linked to the physical pains and aches you have. You might be surprised that in dealing with the emotional pain and physical symptoms, they're going to ameliorate. Now, here's our second to last slide. So you're invited to go to your workbook if you like. Stop the program here if you like, and spend the time assessing your health and practicing the suggestions for self-care. There are checklists there that you can develop into an action plan, and that will help you feel more in control of your health and your well-being. And we've come to the end, so congratulations. You have completed step five. So this presentation aimed at raising awareness about the physical symptoms of CPTSD by helping you to recognize and understand your own experiences, and you've been offered tools and strategies to manage these symptoms. So I'm wondering, how are you feeling now? Thank you for investing in your time today.